The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Monday, Gary, how you doing?
Good. Coming up on the show, Mueller's indictment of more Russians. Well, we already knew about this. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes said we knew about this a year and a half ago, and the public knew about all of this this past spring, when we let everybody know about this. One thing that the Mueller indictment fails to mention is the fact that they also tried to get in to the RNC.
Right.
So we'll get to that and more coming up here in just a little bit. Here's a quote. It all comes down to importing labor or importing food. You know, you and I have talked about this in the past about legal immigration in this country and temporary workers. And, you know, we've made the point. I know I've made the point many times that I can't see that if you wish to have 3 to 4% growth, as has been the average when you look over the last 50, 60, 70 years in this country, if you wish to have that, you're going to need more labor. That in order to get the 3 to 4% growth that we had gotten in the, you know, in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and that overall growth, what we had was women coming into the workforce by the tens of millions. We had a baby boom that we will never, ever see again. And the fact is, we don't have the growth rate that we used to have, and you need labor to get there. Now, I know that, you know, everything that we hear is that, not everything, but a lot of things, that there's not going to be any jobs for people, that technology is killing all the jobs. We keep hearing, I heard that in 1975. We still hear it today. I was told I was told 1970, I remember as a kid. By the time that we get to 1999, we'll all be working 3 or 4 day work weeks because there just won't be enough jobs for the people. It's not the case, is it?
No.
No, not the case at all. We keep being told, I saw another article the other day, 40% of jobs will be wiped out by technology. Well, yeah, but think about what happened during the Industrial Revolution. 90% of the jobs, over 90% of the jobs, were wiped out by the Industrial Revolution.
Well, what they don't do is they don't finish the sentence, because the other part of that is that they'll be replaced by other jobs.
Yep.
We'll be doing different jobs, is the point.
But it comes down to importing labor or importing food, says the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
This was Sonny Perdue.
Mm-hmm.
They on Friday they had a roundtable with farmers with a bunch of different problems, trade and being able to get workers.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we can't get workers. You've got to accelerate it. And as Sonny Perdue said, remember, he was the agriculture secretary for the president. That's the administration.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to importing labor or importing food. And as you and I have talked about, there is no, you know, this is economics. It's, what does economics show us? What do you need? You need raw materials. You need labor.
Mm-hmm.
You need both. And with the labor, in order to get 3 to 4% growth, which overall in the world is unbelievable for the size of our economy. But to have that year after year, if that's the goal, remember the president has said 4% growth, 4% plus growth. Well, you're going to need workers in order to get there.
Right. Sure.
How do you get those workers? Now you can take anybody. Paul Ryan talked about this last week. I forgot how many it is, how many millions of able-bodied workers able-bodied workers out there that, you know, aren't injured in any way are collecting some type of benefits or food stamps. And, you know, Paul Ryan said last week, this has to stop. And I agree. But once you go through that, you're still going to, whether it's a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you're going to need more workers. And as they said, these aren't just, as you know, when they talk about workers on the farm, we're not talking about pickers. We're talking about foremen. We're talking about experienced people that we need on the farms. This isn't just about migrant labor, the traditional migrant labor that you view as just pickers. These are people with knowledge about how to do farming. And they're not in the United States, is what the farmers are saying. And if we don't get them, if we don't import the labor, we import the food.
Well, I mean, you look at the new home construction, construction overall, but especially with single-family homes, they could be, in the states that are booming right now, they could be doing a lot more if they had the labor force. You know, in trucking, they've been talking about the so-called driver shortage for a long time, and there's a lot of debate on that as to whether that's the so-called shortage is driven by regulation or not. It doesn't matter. You're going to need humans to drive those trucks. Even the fully autonomous trucks are likely going to require that somebody be inside that cab for decades to come, because legislators likely won't approve a true fully autonomous truck driving itself on the interstates.
But I want to make it clear, it's the Trump administration saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we've talked about based on economics, based on what we know you need, based on looking at history and seeing when we had 3% growth. When you had, and again, if that's the average, so at times you've had 4% growth. Well, when you have that, remember the tens of millions of women post-World War II that came into the workforce. After they were brought, so many of them were brought into the workforce. That was tens of millions. You had an unprecedented baby boom, which made sure that there was labor in the 70s, the 80s, and 90s. You're not going to have that anymore. You're not going to have a baby boom like that. You're not going to have women, a whole segment of society by the tens of millions, come into the workforce again. And so it's something that you and I have talked about that is needed out there. And the philosophy of Americans right now is, no, we don't need it.
Well,
we don't need to have the temporary workers. And it's interesting, as we said, yeah, you're probably based on economics, not on politics, not on anything else, just basic economics. What do you need to make an economy go? You're going to need workers. The Trump administration on Friday said, quote, it comes down to importing labor or importing food.
Mm-hmm.
No choice.
Well, and you look at the massive sugar tariffs that are in place right now in order to do what? In order to protect the American sugar industry. And if this president is going to stay on tariffs and we're going to be importing more food, well, that's going to be a problem, because that's going to cost everybody at the grocery store. Now, talk about the labor, importing people. Now, the question is the president, what's his approach on this? Do you care about the farmers so to the extent that you can supply the labor through a program, a visa program, whatever it's going to be? Or do you want to, you know, pretend you're protecting an industry by importing tariffs on imported food?
Well, that was
that
has moved up to the number one issue of farmers, according to the Agriculture Department and the roundtable that they had Friday, is the tariffs are going to kill them.
Well, because look at what happens.
And
if they don't have the labor there and you're looking to protect them, you protect them to what end? If they can't produce, if they can't meet their quota to the market, well, they're going to be done eventually.
And the Agriculture Department now is saying if this isn't settled by Labor Day, so we're talking a little over a month and a half away, then because of the tariffs, we're going to have to come up with some way of giving taxpayer subsidies to all of these farmers in order for them to survive.
Right.
And as they said at the meeting, because it says, you know, the president knows that farmers are patriots, but patriotism doesn't pay the bills. And somebody has to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to increase the cost of, you know, overall of food, now food prices have come down a little bit because they've got to get rid of that food. They've got to get rid of it somehow. So if they can't sell it overseas, they've got to discount it heavily, which is why you have seen, for example, the pork producers that said, and this is over a month old, that they had lost already $500 million because they've had to discount their product so much in order to sell it because they can't sell it overseas.
Right.
And so the first thing you'll see is a tremendous discount, and then you'll see the price of it go up based naturally on economics. So the consumer will see an increase in cost, and on top of that, the consumer, which is the taxpayer, is going to have to pay the farmers in order to keep them alive. So hopefully when the tariffs are over, the farmers will still have a business, even if they don't have a market to get back into again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem when you have tariffs.
Well, because after the sell-off, trying to get what you have to the market, then you slow production. When you slow production,
right,
you limit that supply. When you limit that supply, then you're going to raise the cost of that product. So the president is going to have to, again, state his mission and fulfill it when it comes to tariffs. And then he's going to have to deal with the farming industry if he wants to get back through in 2020. Now, keep in mind, he didn't win Iowa in 2016. Ted Cruz did. And Ted Cruz was the one saying, we'll put a sunset on the ethanol mandates. We may not get rid of it right away, but our plan will be phase it out. And Trump was quite the opposite. No. If you want to get through Iowa, you've got to help the farmers. And he didn't win Iowa. Well, now he's going to have to win Iowa. There's not going to be a challenger to the president. But he's going to have to do strong. He's going to have to perform strong in Iowa and in the Midwest states, all the growing states. He's going to have to perform very well there. Question is, how do you fix this problem?
Well, you're going to have to get to the point of saying, okay, because of the tariffs, now we need Congress to appropriate taxpayer dollars to everybody who has suffered because of the tariffs. Because if you give to the farmers, and you're going to have to give to the steel, the people that use steel and aluminum that has skyrocketed.
John Deere, Alcoa.
In price. Everybody.
I mean, everybody that's producing anything, any of the equipment for farming.
Is that going to happen?
How do you do that? You're going to have to include everybody.
Are you going to get Congress to appropriate the money?
There's no way. You would have to. It would essentially. You know what that is on the industry scale? That is the living wage approach, because you would basically have to give everybody in industry that living wage cover. That's what you would have to do.
The new San Francisco mayor. We've got to clean up the city. She means it. What was she talking about? More feces than she's ever seen before in San Francisco, just everywhere. That's how she's going to have to clean up the city. The Peter Strzok fallout, we'll get to that. Riots, tear gas in France, which means, of course, they won the World Cup. The internal FBI employee survey that is done, I guess, quite frequently shows they're losing faith in the bureau leadership. So I don't know. I don't know if Peter Strzok's otter speech.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that we had referred to it as the Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Smith goes to Washington speech. We had a caller who said, look, that was probably a bad analogy. It was more like the otter speech in Animal House.
Yeah.
which we agreed to. So apparently the otter speech probably didn't convince a lot of rank and file when he tried to compare himself to the great history of the FBI and how everybody, is just insulted by anyone who is critical of Peter Strzok.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, it really is amazing because over the weekend when you saw the left, that Peter Strzok otter speech, the left just loved it. They said, boy, he just put all the Republicans in their place.
Yeah, he's the hero.
And as I said originally, when I saw that, I went, how will this play? And then I went, well, wait a minute. Look at the anger in his face. He's still furious at Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Now you can see that he is showing right there. If you're in a court, you're a prosecutor, you just say, I rest my case. There is his anger at Trump.
Mm-hmm. And we know the bias. He can deny the bias all day long. But we have evidence, and he's not denying he wrote any of that.
You just saw the fury, because he was furious. Mm-hmm. We played that audio cut. The Trump-Putin summit, we'll get to that. Gowdy says no impeachment for Rosenstein. Mm-hmm. That and more, plus your calls and comments. We got a great show ahead. All right. If you want to get in, love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. Well, a happy 13th anniversary.
You know, it's been, well, it's been 13 years. Happy anniversary.
13 years in one day because it was actually the 15th.
Yeah.
July.
It
was Sunday.
I didn't get your flowers.
Wow, that's because I didn't send you any.
What?
I didn't send you any flowers.
Well, that's good because I didn't send you
any. In fact, the only reason I thought about it was something came up on, you know, the memories on Facebook.
Yeah.
Something we had posted, like, when... for our 10th,
right,
a few years back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and then it came up in the memory.
Yeah, it came up in the memory. I went, oh, that's today. Yeah. So I saw that, like, yesterday afternoon. I said, wow, it's our 13th then.
Yeah, I was in Walcott, Iowa, at the Iowa 80, hanging out with some great folks, really great folks at the Jamboree, and it came up a few times. I was telling everybody, oh, yeah, we've been doing the show together for 13 years.
Wow. To me... And we had mentioned this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between now and then, the one thing that really has changed so drastically is the fact that when I started with you, that's when we got all the peak oil calls. We've run out of oil.
Yeah.
We're running out of energy.
I mean, it was hot then. Up until probably about...
2008, maybe?
Yeah, I think 2009? Closer to 2010. You know what I saw?
Okay, all right.
I saw something. I forget it was what channel it was on. Nat Geo or something, and it was they had rerun it, but it was some guy who was commenting. It was one of those, what's going to happen at the end of the world? What could happen, and what would things be like, you know, where they theorize this or that scenario, right? And there was one guy, and he mentioned peak oil, and I said, okay, what's the original run date of this episode? And it was sometime in 2011. I said, I can't believe they were still talking about it then.
I remember that show.
And he just briefly mentioned it. And he was talking about it. He goes, you know what scares me is I don't see people on the highways anymore. I said, dude, what highway are you on? I mean, highway's one thing. Get on the interstates.
Well, we would be bombarded because we knew what the new technologies were out there. And we knew they were just a few years away. And we said, look. The amount of oil that they believe is out there is just unprecedented. It's something we're not going to have to worry about for hundreds upon hundreds of years, and we would just get bombarded with peak oil believers, which was, we're running out of oil.
Right.
We was right.
Well, in fact, it seems like we got a little too much. We got so much we can't fit it all in the pipeline in West Texas.
Exactly.
What a great problem to have. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Good amount of rainfall today in the Colorado, Kansas area with heavy showers expected right along the I-70 border and monsoonal flow coming in, heavy amounts of precip just north of I-10 and south of I-40 along, say, I-25 near Albuquerque and El Paso. 200 tourists had to be evacuated out of a Grand Canyon area last week, so rains can come quick in these monsoonal flows, and not a good idea to camp along a dry riverbed this time of year in that region. The rain we mentioned in Colorado and Kansas for today will be moving eastward. By tomorrow, we'll see most of those showers east of the Mississippi, extending from Chicago, Illinois, all the way down to New Orleans, up and down 55, I-65. And a good portion of I-20 from Shreveport to Montgomery. Again, that's for tomorrow. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join Gary and Eric in the Octagon now. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, we started working 13 years ago, 2005. I remember that was we had just started working together when Katrina happened.
Yeah.
I remember having to, we worked a, right. one of the few times we actually worked over a weekend.
Right.
At that point. I'll never forget when we talked to one of our reporters who was actually downtown in New Orleans that night. The other thing I remember from 2005, because you look back and you say, where were we? And that's why I had mentioned the fact that, you know, still everybody was talking about peak oil and that, that the United States was so dependent on foreign oil and we were running out of oil and we need to get to the conspiracy theorists would call and say, we need to get the water car. Remember the water vehicle?
Yeah, right.
But what I remember the most is coming in that one day and I probably was a little angry because I had heard Tom DeLay state at that point that conservatives needed to shut up. This would have been August of that year.
Mm-hmm.
We were working together about a month and a half.
Yeah, just weeks before Katrina.
Just weeks before Katrina.
Yeah.
And Tom DeLay had come out and said conservatives need to shut up. They need to be quiet because the Republicans have cut the budget as far as possible. There is nothing more to cut. And you and I were both critical, and we just got bashed by Republicans that night, if you remember.
Yeah, I thought you were going to be listed critical in the ER because I pretty much, it was during the pre-show meeting I decided, man, new guy is totally going to, he's totally going to collapse here. Head's going to explode. We didn't have our defibrillator, but I thought to myself, I don't think a defibrillator will help you if the head explodes. So I thought, well, I'm not cleaning up the mess. And it was one of those times where, and I just thought, you know, to myself, politically, this is, all right, this is where we are. This is the Republicans. And what happened the following year, by the way? Midterms.
Oh, yeah. They lost.
Yeah. That was a big deal for conservatives who stayed home and were very unhappy with their party. Conservatives usually show big support at midterms. But if this is the way you're going to behave, no. Absolutely not. And that was kind of the, I mean, that basically was, I think, the tone that started to change those things for the November elections in 2006. And I think that was right there. That was it. We're not going to do anymore. We're not going to be fiscally responsible as a party. And
the whole point was I could see if you came out and said, look, politically, we can't do any more. But when DeLay said that, mm-hmm. and, you know, he was viewed as the utmost of a conservative.
Oh, yeah.
So to challenge him, and when we were broadcasting from Texas, made a lot of Republicans furious. And we said, don't get angry at the messenger. He's mm-hmm. the one that said it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's, that was, and it's not true.
No, it's not true.
That was the whole point.
It wasn't true. If he had come out and said, look, we didn't get as much as we wanted cut. We didn't,
right.
You know, there's still lots of work to do, but, you know, we're trying to make progress here. That's one thing. That's not what he was saying. The message was, you guys need to shut up.
Right.
And stop complaining. Well, they were complaining for a reason. That this wasn't some snowflake protest. These were very real and core issues at the time with conservatives, and up until that point had been to at least some degree with the Republican Party.
And when I look back and think that it was, wow, here probably, you know, 23, 24 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when I first thought, where's the Republican Party going? And that was when the Republicans wanted to reduce the
rate of growth
mm-hmm. of both Medicare and food stamps.
Right.
and they were accused of wanting to kill old people and... No, I'm sorry. Not food stamps. The school lunch program. Reduce the rate of growth. Because they said, look, this, you know, we're giving subsidized lunches even to the richest schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may not pay it, but they're being subsidized. And, and you know, we need to make this... We need to reduce the rate of growth of this program. And they were accused of wanting to kill old people and wanting to starve kids.
Right.
And then I'll never forget the poll being done of Republicans, where the vast majority of Republicans thought that the school lunch program was a good program, that should not be, the rate of growth shouldn't be reduced or anything. And I just went, wow, if Republicans believe that, we're lost. That was a huge, I'll never forget, I remember, I thought about that, you know, where I was at that time, and then said, just remember, and let's see where the Republican Party goes, you know, over the next decade or so. And then I remember 2005, that August, was another benchmark where I said, wow, delay saying that, absolutely a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't cut anymore. Of course you could have cut more. It's basically bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
what a ridiculous statement that was. And to me, he lost all credibility as a conservative on that day that he said it, to where we are right now with the Republican Party, where spending just doesn't matter anymore at all. It just, it really, really doesn't. But it doesn't, we need to make this clear. It didn't come. I think, again, one of the early notices from the actual Republican voter came way, way back 23 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they came out and said, no, the school lunch program's a good thing. It's good that we send our money to Washington, D.C., so it can float around the bureaucracy and then be allocated back to each and every school district, that's a good, efficient way to run a school lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I just said, wow, I see the Republican Party going in the wrong direction. And what we found out is, just like Obamacare, how Republicans changed completely. The Republicans were completely against Obamacare. Then by the time it got to be last year, when the Republicans were completely in power, well, we don't like the mandate, but we love the benefits. Don't take away the benefits
mm-hmm,
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, same kind of thing I see from the school lunch program from 23 years ago, the same thing. And then when it came to spending and you know, the politicians, you know, we call them the swamp, but the swamp, if the Republicans... They're not the swamp anymore. They used to be called the swamp during the Trump campaign. But the Republican leadership was just responding to what their voters were telling them.
Mm-hmm.
All along, that's all that's been going on. That, well, they don't listen to the people. When they may not be listening to the conservatives, but the conservatives are a shrinking base in the Republican Party right now, especially fiscally, not culturally, not on the cultural issues, but fiscally, absolutely. And as we have said many times before, you know, the Democrats are turning into complete socialist/communists, and they are quite delusional in what they believe the country actually can handle fiscally, or the fact that if they actually believe socialism/communism will work and you can supply everything to everybody, well, you are quite delusional. But we wonder whether Republicans actually beat their delusions by believing that you can have a government that spends a ton of money, but still will stay out of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what many Republicans want. They don't want an intrusive government, but they want a government that's going to take care of a lot more than they expected the government to take care of 20 years ago.
Right.
And we want you, oh, we like the benefits of Obamacare. Okay, we like the benefits of this. We don't like to pay it, but don't take away my guns. Stay out of my business. Well, the fact is, once you ask a huge federal government to get involved in your business and take care of you, eventually they're going to want to go further. And the fact that Republicans, a lot of the rank and file, talking about the voters, don't understand that is a serious challenge for the Republican Party and the conservative movement in the future.
It's as if the instinct changed after the recession. It's as if, or there was, and it's likely a combination of, you know, all the above. And we've talked about this difference in attitude. Well, if they're going to bail out the big banks, then I better get mine. I should be getting mine.
Yes, we got tons of calls on that. I remember that when that was happening.
And it was,
there's another part of the evolution.
Right. So it's but there's no doubt. There's no pressure right now on the Republican Party to have any fiscal restraint.
So that's the change I've seen in the last, 13 years with the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. With the Democrats, their change really came, at least, you and I working together, the big change in 2006.
Right.
And that's when they took back Congress 2 years before Obama. And all of a sudden, I mean, all the way through, because I've been a talk show host since 89, and it was really in the 90s during the Clinton administration when Bill Clinton got in power, that the Democrats were really, really focused on, let's focus on being about the middle, even though our instinct is to be far left. Let's just, and that's when you started hearing, well, they're running for office, and so they're moving to the middle. They're moving to the middle. They're moving to the middle. By the time we got to 2006, it was as if Democrats felt emboldened to just tell people what they really thought. And that's when you started the beginning of the radical philosophy that you see the modern Democrat Party right now. How absolutely radical they are as to what they want. Where the California Democrats, even though the people, this is the whole point. I'm talking about the party, not necessarily the voter. Because we saw, you were just mentioning in our pre-show meeting about the California Democrats saying, Dianne Feinstein? Nah, we don't want her. We're not going to endorse her. But the voters have overwhelmingly.
Oh, yeah, and she's going to beat her opponent, likely, if the numbers hold.
But the Democrats don't want it. The party itself is becoming extremely radical, and that's why you saw some of the defections you saw in 2016 with Trump.
Right.
They've looked at it and said, where in the world is this party going?
Mm.
Where in the world are they going? Did you see, what was it, the Miss Universe pageant contestant? Was it from Spain, whatever, who's a transgender woman, a man who's a woman, and said finally that, and this was on Twitter, finally that, it was from the article that I saw on Twitter, a woman is not based on your, I'm paraphrasing here, not based on your physical attributes or your genetics. If you feel you're a woman, you are. You should have seen the response from feminists.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, they just went crazy.
Well, yeah, remember. Hey, Caitlin, you didn't live your life as a woman.
Well, the appropriation of gender charges coming from feminists, liberal feminists out there. But that's how insane. And then we talk about the whole transracialism. Obama, just before he left office, stating that he's come to know that race is more of a social construct, which means you're the race that you think you are. That is the radical.
If Trump had said that,
could you?
That would have been the story for at least a week.
And so you see the radicalness that is coming out of the Democrats, and so that's really in the two parties. That's really been the change since we've been together for the last 13 years that I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
But happy anniversary anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to order myself some Sherry's Berries.
Okay. Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Interesting, because when Friday came along, it was, can you, Russians indicted. Can you believe what the Russians, we already knew about this for months. This was no new information. The Republicans had released this past spring, and the House Intelligence Committee had been investigating this and put out a report. Like I said, in spring, but as Devin Nunes said yesterday, we've known about this for the longest time. And
sure.
How come there are no indictments for going after the RNC, only the DNC? They went after the Republicans, too.
Right.
By the way, did you see Tom Perez, the DNC chairman, on CNN? And they asked him directly. Well, they asked him the question directly. I'll find the audio cut coming up here. They asked him directly, well, did you ever turn over your servers yet? He gives this long-winded answer. And they go right back to him and said, but did you ever turn over your servers yet? And he never answered it again. He wouldn't answer the specific question. Apparently, they've still never turned over their servers to the FBI.
Because if the answer were yes, he'd just say yes.
Yes, exactly. He said, well, we've cooperated with them fully. Well, did you turn over? Well, we've cooperated with... It's like he would answer the question. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Just still this long after...
And it's been that way from the beginning.
It has, yes.
You know, it's honestly, I've been saying we're doomed for a while. But when you look at this entire, the further out we get from the beginning of all this, the more ridiculous it becomes. And these are the people running the country.
I know.
That's just amazing to and frightening to think the level of power that they have.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, welcome. Good morning.
Hello.
How's everybody doing? Well, it was all the hype and hoopla about the indictments coming from Mueller against the Russians. Mm-hmm. Devin Nunes finally on Sunday morning got on Fox News and said, nothing new here.
Right.
We've known this for a year and a half.
Right.
Let's hear what he had to say on Fox News.
And then the findings released to the public at the end of April. I've got the report right in front of me. Your reaction to these indictments?
Well, we knew about this a year and a half ago. Almost everything in the indictment we knew about. In March 22nd, we released our findings that you have in front of you right there. Those findings were available March 22nd. If you remember, the media mocked us.
Yes, I do remember.
They made fun of the Republicans. They said it was a whitewash.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats said it was a whitewash. Nearly everything the Democrats said about our report was that it was a whitewash. Then we had to fight with the intelligence agencies and the Department of Justice so that they would not redact and they would declassify our report. That was finished in April. So this entire report that you have in front of you, including all you had to do was get to page 4, and you only had to read chapter 2, and you would have had nearly everything that's in the indictment.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Look at all these redactions that you can actually see on the screen.
And it's page after page of that. And actually, there's more in this report than what's in the indictment. Okay? And this is what's very frustrating. So it's great that they indicted Russians. Yes, they did bad things. I mean, they're always up to bad things. We know that. They have very sophisticated intelligence capabilities in Russia. And they're constantly attacking the United States and our allies. However, in the indictment, they leave out some really important people that they also went after. So the indictment plays like they're only going after the Democrats. When Bob Mueller and all his investigators and his lawyers know for a fact that they also targeted Republicans. Mm. Why is that not in the indictment? It makes the indictment look ridiculous.
Okay. So
I'm not saying they shouldn't be indicted.
The Russians were targeting both Democrats and Republicans.
And Republicans.
Yeah.
And they know that. It's in our report. So why doesn't Department of Justice allow this to be declassified so the American public can see this?
The other thing is that these people are never going to see justice, right? I mean, we don't have jurisdiction over these people. They're not going to come to the U.S., and so they really won't actually be held accountable.
Right. They're intelligence officers, so they're not going to be held accountable. It doesn't mean, though, that we shouldn't call out Russia for attacking conducting cyber attacks on our system.
But the timing of this, I mean, they released this right after the Peter Strzok hearing. And your point is, we knew all of this a year ago. Why is now the time to make these arrests and not a year ago when you actually had the information?
Well, I have to call into question. You knew about this a year and a half ago. You for sure knew it because you got our report. So you for sure knew it by March and April of this year. And then it looks like all the Mueller team did was validate our report indict some Russians and leave out, I think, some very pertinent relative of evidence that the American public should see, which is, you know, why we continue to have to fight. This report has been mocked by the media, has been mocked by the Democrats, and still is mostly redacted by the Department of Justice and the intelligence agencies.
And all of these redactions really underline a common theme, and that has been obstruction on the left. You know, you look at that Peter Strzok hearing last week, and there was so much obstruction on the Democrat. They were trying to change the subject. They were trying to stop the questioning of what went on during the 2016 election. So how are you going to get to the information when you see you're in a catch-22 situation, because every time you want to know why the Trump collusion investigation launched in the first place. But when you ask that question of Peter Strzok or anybody else in the FBI, they're going to say, we can't talk about it because it's an active investigation. And it is by the special counsel. Yeah.
Which is true. And it's everything that we have talked about. And as you know, our conclusion Friday, which was our conclusion Thursday, and our conclusion last Wednesday, and our conclusion last Tuesday, and our conclusion last Monday, and our conclusion for the last year and a half is, and even after the Democrats were promoting the fact that Peter Strzok shows the integrity of the FBI, well, then you ought to be screaming for everything to be redacted so you can know that Trump was the bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't make, you had said earlier, it's just, you shake your head. It's absolutely unbelievable that the more we know, the less interest it seems that the Democrats and the media have to get to the actual truth of what happened here. You and I have been consistent for the last year and a half. Release more information. Release more information. But if you look at where the obstruction has been to getting to the truth, every single time, it is the left, it's the media, it's the Democrats that wish for the truth not to come out. And they've used everything. You name it, they've used it. Well, we can't allow this out because it's going to show sources and methods. And then when we finally get it released, does it show sources and methods? No. We can't release this because it will put people in harm's way. And what do we find out? It doesn't put anybody in harm's way. Once the information comes out, nobody makes that allegation at all. They've been continually lying, the FBI and the Department of Justice. And their opinions continue to be backed by the media, by the Democrats, by the left. And you have to ask why. And then we get to last Friday. And then we get to last Thursday and last Friday with the release of this report as if it's brand new information. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, this is really amazing. Well, no, it was out a while ago, and you mocked when the Republicans came out with this. You mocked it completely. This is basically what the indictment is. And nobody's challenging Nunes on this. This was yesterday morning. I didn't see anybody challenge him on it yesterday.
Right.
And saying what he was saying is untrue. And I guess it's hard to when you can actually look at the report, when you have the report in front of you. And then with Peter Strzok, the Democrats were screaming, see, this shows you the integrity of the FBI. Then fine. Let's release this information to show the integrity of the FBI, to show the integrity of Peter Strzok, to show the integrity of Andrew McCabe, to show the integrity of James Comey. We can go to show the integrity of Lisa Page. We can go and see that Trump was to blame for everything. Just release the information. We would think the Democrats would agree with us to release all the information, and they don't. They wish to obstruct. Why?
Well, because further and further, the only logical explanation is that they know more and more, and they have known, especially inside the Beltway, but I think even the rank and file know, there's nothing here. There's nothing here on anyone in the campaign, the Trump campaign, that would be, or the president himself in terms of interfering with the election. What came out on Friday was that they do believe there were Americans that were in contact with these 12 intelligence officials from Russia that were indicted, but were not aware of what they were trying to do, or even possibly who they were. And so when you look at that, that tells you what? Well, still, with the other indictments that came down with the other Russians, who were not official intelligence officers with Russia, with the nation, but with the country, but they had contacts and close ties, rather, with the Kremlin. When you look at all of that, and there were no Americans in that indictment, no Americans in this indictment, and as Devin Nunes says, nothing's going to happen to these 12 intelligence officials from Russia. Nothing's going to happen. When I saw him say that, I thought to myself, because I had been wondering since Friday, what if they do show up with an American law firm to address the charges, to answer to the charges? What if they do? If they're charged as individuals, they have a right to discovery, like the other Russians. They have a right to a speedy trial. What if they were to try and take, and this would be something right out of a Putin playbook. I suspect this will not happen. But would Mueller be prepared? He wasn't with the others. If these intelligence officials showed up, the 12 that were indicted on Friday, and said, okay, we want to respond to the indictment. Here, we're here in court. They're lawyers. We're here. We're ready. We'd like full discovery. What do you do? Because at that point, you're handing over your case to Russia. He wasn't prepared to do that with the other Russians that were indicted. They're still haggling over that. So what would happen if they showed up in court with a lawyer? I suspect they won't. John Bolton was also on Sunday morning on ABC this week talking about, you know, he was asked the question, do you believe that, because he had spoken to Putin ahead of the summit, this is a few weeks back, and Putin had said, no, we officially, and he used this word that there was no state involvement, and he and John Bolton made the case that the translator was told to make sure to clarify that there was no state involvement. Well, now, based on the indictment from Friday, that has all changed. So on ABC this week, National Security Advisor John Bolton asked that question. Well, did you believe Putin then? He said, no, I think it's ridiculous. But what happens now with the summit this week? Well, does this hurt the president? Was he surprised or shocked? Did this impact the president negatively ahead of this summit with Putin? Bolton said, no, I think it allows him to put it on the plate and address it and say, hey, this is a problem. And we'll see if he actually, I suspect he will. I don't think he's going to have any problem addressing anything.
Who was it who said the left, you know, calling, you know, this meeting needs to be called off. This can't believe that an American president would do this. And somebody posted on Twitter, FDR met Stalin.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on handling cargo. Commercial drivers are responsible for ensuring a customer's cargo arrives on time and intact. But cargo that shifts affects more than just cargo claims. It becomes a safety risk. Drivers must examine the load and any securement devices within 50 miles of the start of the trip. The vehicle's cargo and securing devices must also be re-inspected during the trip, including whenever the driver makes a change of duty status, after the vehicle has been driven for 3 hours, or after the vehicle has been driven for 150 miles, whichever occurs first. Make necessary adjustments after each cargo inspection. You're not required to check a load sealed by the shipper that's not to be opened, or if checking the cargo is just not practical. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, thanks for being here this morning. So yeah, so we, you know, you just shake your head at times because all we got on Friday was a repeat of what we already knew and a report. The Mueller indictments that came out that mirrored what was in the Republican, which was from the intelligence report, which Devin Nunes said they knew a year and a half ago. And then it went public the report came out in March. They couldn't make it public because of the redactions until April. They said, you know, this is, you know, and it was mocked. Mm-hmm. It was mocked by everybody. And they knew what was in it. And as we have said all along, and it comes down to this. You can go through all the minutia of everything, by the way, as we have. But what it comes down to is one thing. Release more information. Let us know what happened. The Democrats cannot scream. They can't have it both ways. They can't scream that the FBI and the Department of Justice showed complete integrity, that Peter Strzok deserves the Congressional Medal of Honor. Okay, it was the Purple Heart. You understand the point I'm trying to bring up. That he deserves the Purple Heart and not scream for transparency so they can find out what Trump did wrong. Can't have it both ways.
No. But the left can keep playing this out time and time again on Capitol Hill. There clearly is no political will from the Republican Party, aside from Devin Nunes, Trey Gowdy, and maybe a handful of others, to try and get to the bottom of this. What was it, 2-3 weeks ago? Nunes and the deadline thing?
Well, no, it came up against the impeachment thing, came up again this weekend. Trey Gowdy said no impeachment of...
Well, the reason it's not going to happen is because they don't have party support for that. There's no political will. Now, if the constituents of the other Republican House members were screaming in unison, that would change. During a midterm year, that would definitely, during any election year, that would definitely change. Nope. I mean, you're getting it from the conservative districts. Otherwise, there's no political will to move forward with that, which is why we asked the question and we're still wondering if the president will there be any kind of action by the president to move to declassify that information so it can be released and we can move on with this? Or is the thought at the White House by General Kelly, don't do that, stand back, don't make any move because politically it may hurt you. You don't want to bring it up. Just let it play out, or let the sleeping dog lie. Because here's the thing: politically, who are you trying to appease? Well, we go back to the majority of the Republican constituents are not screaming at their representatives to get this thing done. Because if the political will was there, then that's exactly what would happen. It's not there, and the president doesn't have to worry about standing down here and not doing anything. Because there's nobody screaming for him to do anything.
So where do we go from here? Because I don't believe the political will before a midterm is there in the House to impeach anybody because they don't want the focus there. They want the focus on the abolish ICE.
Right.
That's what they wanted. You know, politically, that's what they wanted. So the only thing that you have before the midterm elections... Because I really don't, I'd be surprised if the impeachment happens. That would be extremely surprising. I doubt that it will, would be the president coming out and saying, okay, as Devin Nunes has said, the president has to come out and declassify. Well, that solves your problem.
But does the president feel pressure to do that? If there's no pressure on the Republican Party and the members of the House that clearly aren't moved to do this, again, the handful being the heads of the committees, Nunes and Gowdy, and then I'm sure a number of others, but really the majority of the Republican Party clearly isn't pressing for this. Where's the unison for them to force the FBI and their hand?
Well, they have how many signed the letter?
Mm-hmm.
How many signed the letter from a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the majority of Republicans? So they want it. They just don't want to go to impeachment to get.
Well, they don't want to do anything about it.
Right.
I mean, they don't want to actually move on it. They want to do something that's non-binding.
But they want it. It's just how far will they go politically?
Undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Thanks for being here with us as we begin our 14th year together.
Yeah, thank you.
And I will say one thing has not changed.
What's that?
Since 2005.
What's that?
I'm no more of a soccer fan than I was in 2005 than I am now.
Yay, France.
They beat Croatia. I didn't see any of the game.
No, I didn't either.
I just, it's soccer. I'm sorry, and I know the soccer people. No, I don't say I'm sorry.
I'm also not watching cricket. I'm also not watching tennis.
I didn't watch any tennis either.
Yeah.
I'm
also not watching much of baseball, basketball, or football these days.
I did watch the interview with McEnroe from what's his name show? Joe Buck's show.
Mm.
That was interesting. That was on over the weekend. That premiered.
Yeah.
And, they were talking to McEnroe about tennis today. The way that they were and some of the changes you'd like to see. And they'd like to see these changes. He said, nobody watches it anymore.
Right.
It's like, well, he's saying, it's like, nobody watches it anymore. Do the things that I suggest. And he makes a great point.
Mm-hmm.
That personality, you think about it. You think about the tennis of the 70s and the 80s, but the personalities that were out there.
Oh, yeah.
McEnroe and the Connors, that's why people watched.
I mean, but, and that would be the kind of the almost the train wreck or excitement you're waiting for, McEnroe to mouth off or whatever it is. And the personalities, Billie Jean King, I mean, you go back to the number of stories coming out of the sport of tennis. What do you see anymore? The name Williams, but
yeah, that's true.
That was, which is a good story. It's a great story. But the thing is, you can't be nice like they are and get much attention. Of course, they got a lot of attention because of their talent, which should be the case. The point being is that if you want to bring people to the television, especially in a 2018, when there's so many choices.
Yeah,
back in the day, before the cable really exploded and satellite TV exploded, much longer a long time before the internet, then of course there were fewer choices, but there was a reason still that you tuned in.
I just think, especially in individual sports, except outside of the Olympics, personality is what draws people in.
Well, and that's it.
Personality and interesting stories. The Williams sisters were extremely interesting story.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And then the dominance for years mm-hmm. is just, you know, you're talking about a mega superstar at that point,
right.
which is a rarity. Mm-hmm. But you think about it, and I know not to say there aren't great tennis matches, because I get it from all my tennis friends all the time. You don't understand. The matches are great.
Sure.
I'm sure the soccer is great.
Yeah.
Nobody's stating that people aren't great at doing it. But as we all know, there's a reason that Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are planning. Did you hear about this $10 million challenge just between the two of them? Winner takes all. That I have no interest in watching at all.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I don't care about an exhibition between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that, you know, if they're doing well, and I watch golf, but if they're doing well, I want to see them in a real tournament going head to head with each other, not an exhibition match for $10 million. I could care less about that, but why are they doing it? Because there are a significant portion of people that want to watch those two personalities go up against each other. The two old
yeah.
guys.
Well, here's the thing is that with that, I thought, well, what if one of them is just really having an off day? It's going to be horrible. and with golf, that could be the case.
Yep.
And with either one of them, it might be the case on any given, you know, on any given day.
That's why they probably will play match play. I would, they would play match, which is, you know, you win the hole.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't, if you have a 10, you never get to that point of having a 10.
Mm-hmm.
You can still play bad golf, but the tournament can go on for a significant period of time. But still, yeah, you could still, if you're up, you know, if you win a match, you know, you were in the first 10 holes and,
yeah.
you know, it's a snore fest at that particular point. But I remember there was an exhibition a few years back. It was Tiger Woods, David Duval. Oh, I can't think of her. The
Michelle Wee?
No, the Swedish golfer.
Mm.
The one that played here at Colonial. Remember, she played with the men? Annika Sorenstam.
Mm.
And I forgot who else was in it. I can't remember who the other female was.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a tournament. It was actually under the lights. They put lights on a golf course, and it was like a prime time golf. When David Duval, apparently, I think was number one. I don't think Tiger had taken over at that point. That had happened a long, long time ago. But they played that under the lights. And I remember watching a little bit of it and went, boring!
You know, I think what would be more interesting is if you, you know, because if you look at like a pro-am thing, but a celebrity pro-am kind of match between, you know, instead of just a match a celebrity with a pro and go back and forth. You know, show that over a period of like a week or two or whatever it might be, maybe do two different weekends, that kind of thing. But again, that gets back to the personality.
Well, you heard that they had in Tahoe, they had the celebrity golf tournament this weekend,
mm-hmm.
which really it's the best celebrity, you know, golfers out there. You know who won it?
Mm.
Romo.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I saw that, yeah.
And then today he's trying to qualify what's he trying to qualify for? Would it be the British Open, I think, he's trying to qualify for this week?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's something going on, I think, that he's qualifying for. I'm mm-hmm. not sure what it is. Maybe is it the U.S. Amateur? Maybe it's mm-hmm. a U.S. Amateur.
Yeah.
That's what he's trying to get in.
You know, I was in the Quad Cities in the John Deere Classic was going on, but I they may have gotten rained out because Friday there was a lot of rain. They had 3+ inches in some areas of the Quad City, so I don't know if they got rained out or not. I didn't see a lot about it because I just didn't have time to focus on it. I didn't watch any local news while I was there either. But I did see the headline out of Tahoe. I can't imagine how crazy it is at Lake Tahoe with that tournament going on.
Michael Kim won it.
Okay. At the John Deere Classic?
Yes.
Yeah, because it cleared out on Saturday, so I don't know what the course is like there, but they should have had some drying time Saturday and although Saturday afternoon late, there was more rain. So I don't know. I really don't know how that had affected play.
They got all four rounds in.
Mm.
Wow. But, you know, I didn't watch any of that tournament. You know why? I didn't see any of the top really 10 golfers in the country in it.
Yeah.
So I really...
You know, it's interesting. The buzz didn't seem to be there in the Quad Cities. No, I was... My time was limited. And again, my travel was limited. I really didn't get around Davenport or anything like I usually do. So,
well, that's because it's the a lot of the players are playing in the Scottish Open as the
right.
which is like the pre-tournament to the British Open.
Okay.
So I don't even see. I didn't pay attention this weekend at all as to who won it.
The Scottish Open?
Yeah. Brandon Stone. So.
All right.
But my point is for soccer, because that was the whole point. I don't care. If the United States would be in it, I'd probably watch it.
Sure. You know? Right.
But, except for watching the Liverpool Barcelona tournament for the European thing when I was in Florida visiting my buddy and all of his buddies from Liverpool called him up, said, come on, we're all watching it. And so it was the first full game, you know, first full match, excuse me, that I'd watched since the United States women beat the Chinese back in 1999 when Brandi Chastain pulled off her top and just had the sports bra on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, it's, you know, a lot of people talking about it on Facebook, and it seemed like there was more excitement than there's been in the past. I think people pay attention to it, but. It'll be interesting to see what the final ratings were for that. And now, what are we into? Now we're straight into training camp starting the next 2 weeks for the NFL. And the big thing that I'm looking forward to and is, you know, what's going to happen with the whole, and I say looking forward to because the owners had taken a stand. The owners took a stand. Sorry, there's a rule. You know, you're going to have to stand if you're out here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know the Players Association wants to negotiate in a confidential way. They don't want it to be public what's going on, but neither do the owners. I will have secret talks and we'll all agree to something in order to placate the players. Remember, we were told that there are players that plan on sitting out the entire season. Nobody has come forward at this point. And so my thing is this thing now over with? Or are players still going to protest at this point and then get fined and or suspended or whatever during the regular season? Because the owners have taken a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew something was up. We had talked about this a couple of months ago when some of the owners were coming out and stating, well, we've been talking to the players and, you know, a lot of them weren't aware of the implications. And what you and I said at that point was, oh, the owners are telling them this is going to affect your next contract.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot lose 20% of our TV audience over a period of 2 years that you, the player, aren't affected by it. Go protest wherever the heck you want. You do it here, we lose TV ratings. That's the reality of it.
And you see the ratings drop. The ratings drop was likely going to happen for a number of reasons, and it did happen for a number of reasons. It was going to happen anyway. So you're fighting even harder to get people to sit in front of the TV for 3 hours. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, it's tough for me if I rent a movie online. I rented, it was a movie from 2015, San Andreas. If you've seen 2012, pretty much the same thing, right? But big action movie. But I have to pause movies every 20, 30 minutes. I mean, there's just too much going on. I just don't have the movie time for a movie, even 90 minutes to 2 hours. People just don't make that kind of time in their life. Even hardcore sports fans right now, they're not sitting for the long periods of time watching games. They can follow along, but that time spent in front of the TV is dropping. And the ratings numbers dropping. So now what are you going to do? How do you change that? How do you? You're going to have to fight at every level to bring people back. And if they're cutting the cable and you're making deals, I mean, that's one of the problems ESPN is having. If people are cutting the cord, then how do you get them to watch? You need subscribers. They're going to have to be able to watch. It's that simple.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, internal FBI employee survey shows plummeting faith in bureau leadership. And this is something that had come out in March. I wonder what it would be if they took it today. I wonder. Now, they say employees. It'd be interesting because employee is different. Employee might be different than if you just interviewed all the agents, polled just the agents.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the set, how it would change between the agents and other employees, administrative employees that are not agents in the field, trying to get the work done. That is the
right
mission.
And there might be a great relationship where it might not be that much different.
Yeah,
because
that,
they work so
could
closely
be,
together.
Could be either
I don't
way.
Know.
Could be either
right.
way. Right. But that's interesting though that you do see it because I thought of Comey. Protect the integrity of those agents. And then Strzok said something along those lines last week. And it's like, yeah, sorry, you guys were at the top. And now, is it about leadership in general? Is it about Director Ray? Where is this, what is this targeting, I guess? Where is the concern in terms of leadership?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Hi. Thanks for being here. Meanwhile, in San Francisco Mayor London Breed, in her first one-on-one interview since taking office, this from NBC San Francisco, said homeless advocacy groups that receive funding from the city need to better educate the homeless to clean up after themselves.
Educate? No. I don't think educate is the word. I don't think that's the tactic you should use.
You
gotta make them care.
Could you imagine if a Republican said that?
Yeah. Educate them.
Here's a headline. San Francisco mayor, there's more feces than I've ever seen. End of quote. The London mayor discusses her plan to clean up San Francisco, and we mean literally clean up.
Yeah. All right.
When pressed about whether her plan calls for harsher penalties against those who litter or defecate on city streets, the mayor said, I didn't express anything about a penalty.
No.
Instead, the mayor says she's encouraged nonprofits to talk to their clients who unfortunately were mostly responsible for the conditions on our streets. Impeach!
Yeah. Good luck with that. Not going to change anything. Because what she's doing is she's pretending she cares about the problem. Well, if you impose fines, punishment, something, at least there is that incentive for these individuals to clean up after themselves. That, by the way, if they get caught.
I just thought we would lead off this hour with what's happening in San Francisco.
Yes.
In other news, I want to play this here because of course I had to talk to the head of the DNC, Tom Perez.
Sure.
On CNN, and Anna Cabrera talked to him, and because the DNC, this was with the whole Mueller thing, and the hacking into the DNC. And we've already played Devin Nunes from the House Intelligence Committee saying, this is all information we've known for a year and a half. Nothing new here. Became public in the spring. Everything's still heavily redacted. But the majority of the Mueller indictment, the vast majority of the Mueller indictment, is what was in the Republican report that was mocked by Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Tom Perez, of course, is on CNN, and he is asked on CNN, whether they ever let the FBI actually see their computers, their servers.
Right.
Remember, that was the whole question?
Mm-hmm.
The Republican National Committee told the FBI, whatever you need. And by the way, Devin Nunes also brought that up in the indictment. One of the things that was missing from the indictment report was one of the things that was in the Republicans' report was not only were the Russians, going into the DNC, but they were attempting to get in to the RNC, and that was completely kept out of the Mueller indictments, and he's wondering why.
Yeah.
Because it comes across as being stupid or not complete or biased by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the question comes up on CNN to Tom Perez about, have you let the FBI see your servers? How long is this after now? Almost 2 years?
Yeah, right.
And watch him first get into a long, drawn-out answer where he doesn't ask the question. Then he is asked again the follow-up and still doesn't answer the question.
Specifically about what we're learning in the indictment, about how they did their hacking and the dissemination of these stolen documents and data. President Trump suggests there was, some nefarious reason the DNC didn't turn over its computer servers after the hacking was discovered. And in fact, in January of 2017, the FBI said the DNC had rebuffed its request to examine computer servers. Have you since then given the FBI or special counsel investigators access?
Now, let's see if he answers the question, okay? Just had to pause for a moment. We'll see your answers.
This today's tweet is rehashing old gruel, more conspiracy theories. The fact of the matter is that we cooperated fully with the FBI. And when then-Director Comey went to Congress, he himself said that what he should have done differently was, I think his term was, cast a flare-up to the DNC even earlier about what was going on. The DNC cooperated throughout. And again, today's tweet is another effort to distract from the matter at hand. And the matter at hand is that the Russians, they not only hacked the DNC, but they hacked the DCCC. They attempted to infiltrate secretaries of state and boards of elections. They were successful in one state, getting, as you correctly point out, roughly 500,000 individual names and personal information. And they did this so that they could attempt to swing our elections. That is an act of war. And if we had a Democrat in the White House right now, we would have...
Okay, now, apparently she's not satisfied that he hasn't answered the question, because the question was, have you allowed the FBI to actually, analyze your servers, correct?
Right.
Because remember,
right,
it's an act of war and everything else, mm-hmm, as Tom Perez was saying. So let's see, does she follow up? I believe she does.
We would have a cabinet that's dealing with this.
Forgive me, I didn't mean to step on you, but I'm short on time.
No.
Has the DNC done everything in its power to make sure this doesn't happen again and to get to the absolute bottom of what happened? Have you turned over the DNC servers?
We have cooperated from day one, and we continue to cooperate. And again, all you need to do is read the testimony of then-Director Comey when he...
So as you can see, he won't answer the question.
Right.
See, this is where I'd stop and say, you're not answering my question. Did you turn? Which is why we don't have, you know, guests. I'd never have guests if I was on a TV show like that because they'd never come on again. Stop it. You didn't answer the question. Did you let them look at the servers, yes or no?
And it is a simple yes or no.
Right. It's a simple yes or no. And I'd stop them again. And then they'd accuse you of interrupting. Well, I'm interrupting because you're not answering the question. You're filibustering here.
You can finish after we get that one-word answer, yes or no.
I'll let you go on for 5 minutes afterwards, yes or no, followed by whatever your explanation would be.
Right.
Which brings me to the question. If socialists are taking over the Democrat Party, you're still going to lie, huh? You're still not going to tell the truth?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter? Doesn't matter who's in there, whether you're a socialist or not. Even the socialists are going to not tell the truth?
Oh, sure.
So the socialists aren't going to make a difference politically in how you do things.
Mm.
We're not going to get honesty with socialism in the Democrat Party? That's my big question, because I was hoping... All right, now I'm lying.
Well...
I was hoping for...
You know, the honesty
with the socialists.
The honesty begins when they say it's about the worker. Clearly, it's about the worker.
I'm sorry, I'm pounding the table here.
Clearly, it's about the worker.
So just saying...
From that, I expect everything else to be just as honest as that premise. Yeah. Nope. And we get our answer through his dancing with the stars. And that's exactly what we already know. Is no, they didn't hand over the servers. No.
Yep.
We cooperated. So the FBI got them then. That's what you're saying. See, I would force him to correct me. Oh, okay, so that means that the FBI got them. That's what you're saying, the FBI got them. Because then he would be forced to correct me. No, I'm not saying that. Oh, okay, thanks.
Answer my question.
Yep.
So you didn't cooperate fully with them?
No, you didn't cooperate fully.
You told me you cooated fully, so you're not being honest with me. Oh, I'd have
why
so
don't,
much fun.
Why doesn't the
so
DNC trust the FBI with their service?
Right. That would be my follow-up question to that. Why don't you trust the FBI? If you say you're cooperating, if this is an act of war, in an act of war, wouldn't you give the FBI your servers if the enemy committed that act of war on your servers?
I mean, don't you believe that the agents like Peter Strzok, don't you believe that they would act with integrity and doing their investigation
and
thoroughly looking at the DNC servers?
The Democrats have come out in full support. They believe that Peter Strzok should get a Purple Heart. Mm-hmm. Why weren't you willing to allow your servers to be investigated by the FBI?
Right.
It's an act of war. As you claim, you believe that one of those fighting the act of war, Peter Strzok, should get a Purple Heart. Why wouldn't you trust him with your server? Oh, this would be so much fun.
Yep. I just don't see where the DNC, in this. On the bigger picture, really, I just wonder where they bring the party together. You couple this little moment here with the fact that the state Democrats in California, Feinstein, you're not. We're not going to endorse you. Yeah, but the people are. The people are voting. You don't vote. The people do. Endorsing her opponent. Okay. But that's the party, again. Going further left, this is California. And Feinstein is getting the votes. Otherwise. Now, for us... She's far enough left, but not for the party. And that's the point, is that they need to be further and further left. They need the party. They need to drive the party further and further left. The far left is driving the party right now.
The NBC had it, California Democratic Party abandons incumbent, Feinstein endorses opponent. Today's vote is a clear-eyed rejection of politics as usual in Washington, D.C., her opponent said in a statement. Yes, of course it is, and that is the fact that the party doesn't want to endorse who the people actually wish to endorse. I believe we sort of saw that in the last election, did we not, with the whole... with the fear of the Democrats. By the way, this does seem like it's politics as usual for the Democrats, does it not? Let me correct myself completely there.
It really is.
The California Democratic Party voted to endorse a progressive state senator over incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein in the U.S. Senate in the party's executive board meeting, though Feinstein beat State Senator Kevin DeLeon by nearly 33 points in the jungle primary last night. Progressive grassroots activists have largely taken control of the state party apparatus in recent years and have pushed for a more liberal candidate to take on the Trump administration. So there you go. So, no, that's where you're going, where the party wishes to say, to heck with the people. It doesn't. Look, the Democrats, the rank-and-file Democrats, doesn't matter whether it's the Supreme Court. We want to put somebody who is unaccountable, who agrees with our day-to-day politics, in the Supreme Court. We wish to move further from a democracy, or whether it's in the state of California where they say, no, the party apparatus wishes to endorse whom the people do not want.
Yeah.
Who are rank-and-file Democratic voters do not want. That's who we plan to endorse, who the incumbent beat by a landslide.
And that's the party looking to take, or the far left looking to take full control of the party itself, which is what's happened, party itself.
She won the jungle primary by nearly 33 points. Now, in the decision by the party, she received just 7% of the vote.
Okay. All right.
The other senator received 65% of the vote. She got 7%. Uh, 94 members elected to vote for no endorsement at all. But he got 65-7. She beat him by the Democratic voters by nearly 33 points in the jungle primary. But the state party defeated her 65% to 7%.
Mm-hmm.
See, in California, if you're a California Democrat, your state party believes you're an idiot. They believe you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They know better than you do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's exactly the way the National Party is going to run. It has been. Bernie? Didn't matter. I mean, what did we learn? Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll kind of pretend like he's, you know, got a shot. But no, she's going to be the nominee. And Bernie's...
Now if Bernie runs in 2020, he's going to be viewed as the far right candidate.
Well, here's the thing. What if she runs in 2020 and Bernie runs in 2020? There's still that chatter out there that people believe that she's going to run in 2020.
Hillary.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you meant
Is there another
Feinstein.
She?
Feinstein, because we were talking about her. I just wanted to didn't know you were talking about her.
Can she, for president? Do you think she would ever run for president?
No. When you said she, I just wanted to make sure you were talking Hillary. Because
Diane's election is this year.
Oh, I know that.
Yes.
Right.
So, who knows what the party will be like by 2020? Look at the changes since 2016. Seriously. They're not afraid of anything right now. Feinstein, please. You're winning, but no.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. This is interesting here. See where this goes. Six Republican campaign volunteers say they were kicked out of an Uber on Saturday as their driver told them, "Welcome to the resistance."
Okay.
The six volunteers were told halfway to their destination in Raleigh, North Carolina, to exit the vehicle at a gas station because the driver, quote, had the right to deny us service. Mary Russell, one of the riders in Uber, told the Daily Caller the six riders exited the car and were told, "Welcome to the resistance," as the driver drove away. It was clear, based on our mild conservative political talk, that the driver realized we were Republicans. Russell, who was the rider who ordered the Uber, told the Daily Caller, after the incident, she received a message from Uber saying that she was inappropriate towards the driver.
Right. Clearly, that was based on the driver reporting
right.
that.
Right. I quote, "I reviewed the relevant policy of Uber, and we did not use inappropriate or abusive language or gestures that would result in the early termination of a ride." Russell said this type of discrimination against.
Stand by. We'll get to most of that, more of that later. For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
Good amount of rainfall today in the Colorado-Kansas area, with heavy showers expected right along the I-70 border, and monsoonal flow coming in, heavy amounts of precip just north of I-10 and south of I-40, along, say, I-25 near Albuquerque and El Paso. 200 tourists had to be evacuated out of a Grand Canyon area last week, so rains can come quick in these monsoonal flows, and not a good idea to camp along a dry riverbed this time of year in that region. The rain we mentioned in Colorado and Kansas for today will be moving eastward. By tomorrow, we'll see most of those showers east of the Mississippi, extending from Chicago, Illinois, all the way down to New Orleans, up and down 55, I-65. And a good portion of I-20 from Shreveport to Montgomery. Again, that's for tomorrow. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Sorry, that was my fault there. Last hour, or last portion of the last segment, when I was into the middle of the story. But the six Republican campaign volunteers that say they were kicked out of an Uber car Saturday night in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah.
She got a message that it was, she received a message saying that she and the others in the vehicle were inappropriate towards her driver. She goes, "I reviewed the relevant policy, at Uber, and we did not use inappropriate and abusive language or gestures that will result in the early termination of the ride. This type of discrimination against politically oriented conservatives should be against the policy of Uber," Russell said. The group then requested another ride and experienced no problems with that driver. Mm. Chris Godby, another one of the riders, also felt the group was unfairly treated. "For an individual to blatantly target young Republicans for their political assault is an assault on the freedoms guaranteed by the First Amendment." No, it's not. While business owners, by the way, if you're going to be a young Republican, you should understand that. Not saying I agree with the business policy,
right.
But it is not a freedom guaranteed by the First Amendment. So if you're going to be a young Republican, understand what the First Amendment protects. While business owners should have freedom to provide the service as seen fit, once a contract has been entered into, breaking that contract is inappropriate, and to do so is based on discrimination for political beliefs is unlawful, he told the Daily Caller. "As a loyal and longstanding Uber customer and proud conservative working to make this country a better place for everyone, this is unacceptable. I will consider other ride-sharing options in the future if this is not addressed." The six were on a campaign trip to North Carolina. Republican Representative Mark Meadows, George Holding, and Mark Walker.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Uber said that they are investigating. We expect all riders and drivers to treat each other with respect. We're looking into the situation, an Uber spokesperson said. So,
well, and it's going to be hard, you know, to prove what happened if you don't have, like, any kind of dash cam that would show or any kind of recording that showed it. And no one is going to admit wrongdoing, then it's going to be hard to prove that, you know, that case. Not surprising, though. This is not out of the norm in today's world. This is exactly what's going on. And by the way, if that Uber driver felt that way and said, welcome to the resistance, then you need to stand on your beliefs. Otherwise, you're just weak. You're just being, you know, you're just being a punk. If you're not going to stand for your beliefs and admit what you did, that means you're not proud of it. Or you're willing to, what, shut up or keep it secret for a price? So,
but I'm wondering,
you should stand for what you believe.
Did they have to pay for that portion of the ride?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was wondering. First thing I was wondering, did they have to pay at all?
Then they would have a breach of contract at that point.
Well,
because the implied contract is you're taking us to our finishing point.
Yeah, now here's the question.
So that might be...
If it was somebody who was unruly, and let's just say they were out of line, a passenger. Then you can end that trip early. And this is why I think the driver, if these the people with the complaints here, the passengers, are being honest, if all is accurate and true, then clearly the driver wanted to get ahead of that by saying these passengers were not playing by the rules. So if they try and make that case, now you've got and I think it is an interesting argument for breach of contract, even though it's not a large contract and a large amount of money. It still is a service that in terms of getting people from one place to another, there's a number of issues that could arise. I could see an attorney for the complaint, the people filing the complaint, saying, look, you put them in a serious situation. They didn't know the area. I don't know if this is the case, but I'm just talking about possibilities. They didn't know the area, weren't familiar with the area. They were supposed to be at a place, a destination based on business or whatever. You know, you could probably make the case for larger than the fee of whatever that fee was going to be. So I think that's probably why the driver stepped out ahead of it again, assuming those making the complaint are telling us the truth here, that the driver, the first thing you would do is you would contact, or just basically they put it in their app that these passengers were not playing by the rules. And so the trip was ended. And so we'll see, I guess, if that plays out at all. I suspect not much will come of it. Unless somebody, again, can show evidence, or the person, you know, that the driver finally says, oh, yeah, I did that.
Well, if Uber can't be happy with this.
No.
Because I'm assuming...
No, it's not good publicity.
Because I'm assuming Uber wants, you know, everyone to be... We're a ride. You know, we give people rides. That's what we do. So I know that I'm going to get... I mean, think about it. Think about any... during election season, with all the different campaign things mm-hmm. that go on, you know, heading to midterm, all the political activities that take place, the taxi drivers before these, that's what the taxi companies should come out. Hey, we'll take anybody. We don't care what your political affiliation is.
Right.
Well, but Uber cannot be for this. I've seen their new public relations ads. Have you seen them?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to, because you're providing a service that, think about the way it's revolutionized how we hire someone to drive for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything from what you just mentioned, cabs, to, you know, limousine services. It's because you can, with your app right there on your phone, you don't even have to talk to anybody. You don't even have to say a word. Boom, car appears minutes later, get in the car, get out at your destination, done.
Well, not only that, but you sit there and you see, okay, here they come. Okay, they're just about a minute away. All right, let me walk outside now. You walk out, you look, you see the picture of the driver, you know the car.
Yeah.
You open the door. Hey, Joe, how you doing? Thanks for picking me up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Gary, what's up?
Yep.
Hey, boom, you're in.
Right. Yep.
And you're on your way, and it's extremely, extremely convenient. And everything's taken care of on the app. I pay, I tip, I do everything, and I can rate the driver afterwards, and he can rate me.
Yes, absolutely.
You know something? I'm telling you right there, that would be where I would want my punitive damages. I want my record clean on Uber.
Yeah, right.
Because I know that I'm more likely to be picked up if I have a 5 rating by an Uber driver than if I have a 2
mm-hmm,
rating.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's inappropriate, and that's on my record as a person, nobody's going to pick me up if I was inappropriate with the driver. I'm not going to be able to get a ride. I want that fixed.
Right.
If you don't fix it, I want punitive damages of $10 million.
Well, if you could apply that kind of value to it. I guess it depends on where you live, right?
Yeah.
But
all right, maybe that's a little bit. Maybe I'm not going to get that.
Well, again, if you were to hire, an attorney on this, there's going to be a lot of money involved there. But beyond that, like, as you mentioned earlier, Uber doesn't want this. Because think about, I know people of all walks of life that use rideshare. Both sides of the political aisle. Why? Well, because they believe it has a value. Has a great value. The convenience of it all. Well, you start messing with their ability to use that rideshare service. And now you've changed the game plan. And by the way, if their lawyer could show that the driver, again, assuming that their complaints are accurate and true, could show that the driver here was doing this not only deliberately to, get them out of the car and put them in a bad spot, but also to report and to tarnish their record on Uber, which would keep them from getting rides in the future, now you've got a much more interesting story.
Yeah, because
it's not just about ending one trip early.
There's only 2 ratings I care about, my credit rating and my Uber or Lyft rating.
Right.
Seriously, I know. Last time I checked, I still had a 5.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, and the reason that's important is, that means, because when I want Uber is when I absolutely have to go from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to do it without question in the next 15 minutes to the far out time limit of a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be there. How do I know I'm going to get a ride? How am I relatively sure? How do I have the maximum confidence that I'm going to get that ride? My rating.
And it shouldn't matter at all what the conversation is. And that's going on with the group that's being transported.
Ah, but that's important to me, the conversation I have, to keep hoping I keep that 5. I'm not attempting to project whatever I believe inside the Uber.
Right. But if you hear a conversation going on, I can imagine the conversations that happen.
I know. They'd be fascinating to me. I'd love it. Even if it was people that I disagree with, it'd be interesting. Okay, what are they saying?
Right.
What do they actually think when they're alone?
Mm-hmm.
When they think nobody's listening. Ah, they probably think that I'm a liberal. I'm not. Let me see what they're thinking. Oh, so you think that way. Huh? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just, I'd be playing some soft jazz music. Enjoy your ride. Here's a water.
They probably advise the Uber drivers, do not put on Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, that would be a no.
Once we all know you're listening before the customer comes in.
Tips to preserve your high rating status. Number one, do not ever play Red Eye Radio in the vehicle while transporting a passenger.
We know you're listening before and after.
Oh, yeah. Right. Hit the pause button.
Because we know.
And come back.
We got a couple months ago, I remember the Uber driver calling us, a call I remember from San Francisco.
Sure. So. And if you're an Uber passenger right now and you're hearing this, we're sorry. we really are nice people, and so is the person driving you. It's a very nice person right there.
Give them a nice tip, and I'm on five ratings across the board.
They're up at crazy hours helping you get from A to B. That's a good thing. It's all good.
And by the way, the only place you can be going at this time of the hour, at least Central and Eastern time, is to the airport.
Yes, or home from the airport, right?
Oh, home from the airport, yes.
Yeah, or home from a bar, I guess. But you know what? You made the right choice.
You made the right choice.
Have somebody else drive you. That's because you're smart. And so is that person driving you. Is that enough? Should I stop there?
That's enough. I think
all right. You know what?
We've blown enough smoke.
Or whatever that is. You know, they're trying to clean up that problem in the Bay Area. Yeah,
they certainly are. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the top of the hour, we'll hear from Trey Gowdy about last week's hearings.
Yeah.
Peter Strzok hearings. And he did say that the public hearings are a circus. It's a freak show, is what he called it.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad he acknowledged that. I think he's had some great moments in his opening statements at these hearings. And he's made some very solid points in a very clear fashion. And I think some very good arguments in the back and forth he's also made. But, you know, he's right. He's acknowledging basically what we've all said. You know, this thing just kind of goes over the top. And where does it go from there? And you would come up with this idea. It was, two or three weeks ago when you said, look, you know, if it was me, all right, we would just go down the line and say, all right, everyone in the GOP, here's the huddle. You're going to ask these questions along these lines. You're going to ask these questions along these lines. And you're going to ask these questions along these lines. And let it be a very deliberate and played out, you know, kind of thing to be very thorough and have everybody in on it. But have it very, I think, calculated so that you can get those important questions in. You know, there's one thing with a grandstanding and, you know, making the points. And I think, again, Mr. Gowdy's made some solid points. But you got to get on to the questions. We know it's not really, it's not an indictment yet. But those questions, I think, have to be asked and in front of the American people. And that's the place for it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.